VGRT Gaming Podcast, episode 394, recorded on August 3rd,
394th edition of the TD Gaming Podcast and the 227th episode of Video Game Roundtable. I am Paul S. Novak.
I am Scott Dirk.
And I am Jonah Falcon.
The VGRT Gaming Podcast focuses on game news from around the industry and includes gaming flashback.
No, that was last week.
occasionally we get, I don't know, Jonah's old. Occasionally he starts talking about stuff that happened back in the day.
No, it's called cut and pasting and forgetting that. We did the gaming flashback last week. We talked about Pepper 2.
Yes, that was an interesting game. I went and looked it up after the show.
It's the Zipper game.
Yes.
It's a game that heavily involves zippers.
yeah, you were right. You do zip up those zones. It's very...
I'm going to tell you something. The game holds up. If you ever get if you ever try MAME, just download Pepper 2.
Yeah.
It's great.
MAME.
Multi-arcade... I forgot what the...
I know what program you're talking about. I've used to play the Willow arcade game, which was much better than the NES Willow game.
Oh, you can play the NES Willow game if you download Nesticle.
But yeah, I mean, I have other ROM emulators. I don't have Nesticle. I had something else. I forgot the name of it. I also have my Commodore 64 emulator, my Apple II emulator. The Apple II emulator is the only way I can play Auto Duel, which sucks because the Apple II version wasn't nearly as good as the C64 version. Mm-hmm. I also have the Neo Geo emulator, which is great. I really enjoy Neo Mr. Do, or was it Super? It was the Neo Geo version of Mr. Do, which is actually a Neo Geo version of Mr. Do 2 because they had all that island stuff. Anyway,
that's cool.
You know what? We should do. We should have done a gaming flashback of Mr. Do's castle or Mr. Do and the unicorns. They're both the same game. Basically, it's Mr. Do emulating Space Panic. So,
a rockin' good time to be had by all. Oh, wait, no.
Anyways, we're going to move on to what have you been playing. So Paul apparently was playing the game of being sick.
Oh, my God, I was near death's door and it was not pretty. Okay, so I missed last week because I was sick. I've been in bed asleep for all about 3 hours a day. For all except 3 hours a day. Did I say that right?
For all.
And after two trips to urgent care, and a doctor or two on the side, apparently I have a canker sore on my tonsil, which is exactly as dangerous as it sounds. I'm trying to figure out if I like these lights.
What lights?
I got light bulb, LED light bulbs, color changing doodad things, off of Amazon for like $9 a piece, and I got 8 of them. And then they show up and they get here, and it's like, oh, they're like 15 watts.
Well, those are LEDs.
They have bright LED lights, dude.
I know, but
these
you
just
know,
aren't them.
LEDs are generally, you expect them to glow, not to illuminate. Sort of like track lights. They're not supposed to illuminate. They're just supposed to glow.
Well, when you have 8 of them in one room...
Okay.
There should be... I kind of like how, like, I can point the same one clicker at each one of them and control them individually from the one universal clicker. That's kind of cool.
So you're playing the game of LEDs.
At the moment, yeah.
The light master.
Hey, you know what? Oh, wait. Paul, I have to ask you this, then. Did you ever own or play Lite-Brite?
It was a toy. Yeah, I had Lite-Brite.
Oh, okay.
My mother was very wise. She photocopied those stencils at her office, and we had Goofy playing tennis for, I think, 10 years.
Okay. I had access to a Lite-Brite. I never owned one, though. I remember the commercial, though. Lite-Brite, Lite-Brite.
a fun little thing to play with. Create all sorts of little light things.
Yeah, so, Paul, what have you been playing?
In the rare well, I've been feeling better today. And in the rare moment that I've had a cognizant thought capable in my head, it's been Heroes of Might and Magic 2. I am only two quests away from the end of the expansion campaign.
You are dedicated. Those campaigns...
Hey, you know, dude, you know what? It doesn't tax my machine.
Those campaigns are a pain in the butt, though. It taxes my brain. That's what it taxes.
If we were going to start listing things that taxed your brain, we'd be here all day.
So, Scott, what have you been playing?
Well, aside from Minecraft and Civilization, I got the King's Quest game that came out, the first chapter of it. I bought a season pass for the rest of them that came out.
Oh, right. The, yeah.
So basically, the reboot, I guess, or sequel, I'm not sure.
Well, this one is actually a little bit more action-oriented, if I remember correctly.
Yeah, it looks
more... It's not a pure adventure game.
Yeah.
So, I mean, Paul, you're a fan of King's Quest, aren't you? I know you like Sierra.
No, I think that my... The greatest amount of exposure that I had to Sierra games, I think, was King's Quest V and Gabriel Knight, if I am not mistaken.
All three of them?
No, the one with the white cover.
I don't know. I know there's three
werewolves.
Gabriel Knights.
Werewolves. Some
Gabriel
Knight
they're
werewolves.
All about werewolves.
Beast Within.
How would I know?
I don't know. Maybe you played Phantasmagoria and didn't know it.
I played one of them.
Oh, okay.
It was the one with the werewolves and the white cover.
Yeah, that's the Beast Within.
Thank you. Okay, see, now that sounds familiar. Thank you, Scott.
Very good one.
As for me, I installed Windows 10.
And, so that is what you've been playing?
Well, yep. Actually, it comes with Solitaire, you know. And one of the neat things is that you can gain achievements on your Xbox Live account by playing Solitaire.
And don't you have to pay for like the full version?
Nope. No. Well, okay. So here's the thing about that: the only thing you're paying for, I believe, is so that you don't have ads on the daily challenges. That's it.
Fair enough. I think that's an absolutely fantastic business model if that's all that you're paying for is to get rid of ads.
All you're doing is paying to not have ads when you do the daily challenge. And the ads at least are related to Microsoft and whatever you're doing, you know, computer stuff, so at least the ads are a little bit interesting.
Mm-hmm.
I've also been playing Mass Effect 1.
Mass Effect 1?
Yep, on my Xbox 360, no less, because I decided to buy the Pinnacle Station DLC. You can't buy the DLC on the backwards compatible emulation right now, chiefly because it's not live yet. We're just beta testing.
You can't tell the thing from the blob without a program.
So I've been getting... And the thing... What I've had... Of the regular game, I didn't have any achievement. I mean, I did almost all the achievements. I only have... four achievements left, and three of them are two of them are on Pinnacle Station. There's one achievement I haven't done yet, and that is beating the game on Insanity, which in hindsight I should have done
because you have that kind of time at your ripe old age.
Well, here's the thing: is I'm playing New Game Plus, so my character is already at the maximum level with
oh
all the maximum
God,
armors.
I love New Game Plus.
So what happens is that I've been playing on casual because I just want to rush through it. So basically when you're playing on casual with all the maximum weapons and armor and all that stuff, basically you shoot them twice, they're dead.
For anybody who doesn't know, New Game Plus is a feature that started around, I want to say, the early 90s. So that after you had beaten a game, if you wanted to replay that same game, you could start with your heroes and all of their weapons and magic and all everything.
So it just made
blasting through, so you didn't have to grind any ever again.
Well, the other thing is that now it's evolved to where, say, in Batman Arkham games, you could play the game with different skins. You know, so if you wanted to play as the...
It's not the same.
Yep, and it also, a lot of New Game Pluses also add more dialogue and stuff like that, extraneous stuff, you know, now that they...
No, but I mean, the concept is your characters pick up where you left off. Because you've already beaten this game, so
well,
you have some more fun.
I'm starting from the beginning, with all these stuff. Anyway, so one of the things I have is that I have Liara with me the entire time because See, there's an achievement for having a character with you during the entire game, and the one I didn't have was Liara, so I'm doing that. So here's the amusing part, is that when I unlocked one of the achievements for Pinnacle Station, I looked, and I hadn't had an achievement in Mass Effect since 2012, so there's a 3-year gap. And then, there's a couple of them before that, I hadn't gotten an achievement since 2010, and like 2 achievements for that, I didn't have any achievements since 2008 and 2007, which was the main time. So I have a gap of 7 years for a chunk of the achievements. You know, it's like the game's like, oh, wait, you're getting achievements, yes. And it's been only 7 years since you were when you first played the game.
Welcome back, sir.
Yeah.
Yes.
It's a nice little way, you know, it's sort of like when you look at the achievements, you get this little shock of, oh, I hadn't played this in 3 years.
That is interesting, because I was looking through my Civ 5 achievements and seeing them sporadic, you know, throughout 30 years that I've been playing that game. That is interesting to see how long.
Well, here's the problem with me and Civ 5 achievements. I don't have many of them. Because the thing is, they require you to play a different way, and I end up more or less using the same strategy
cheating.
To win. No, not cheating. No. No, I reserve cheating for Dragon Age.
I'm sorry, that's a bad habit of mine.
Oh, no,
just because you use the dominant strategy doesn't mean it's cheating.
Well, I have no problems with cheating if a game is badly designed, because I think that's God's way of rectifying bad game design. See.
Oh, are we going to start to get into a conversation about what is and what is not bad game design?
Well, here, the thing is that, you know, Zen.
You want to throw down, baby.
Last week I talked about Zen in the first Half-Life. That was bad game design. No one liked it. I just put on God mode and run through it because it's not interesting. It's not fun.
Yeah, I can't talk to that because I've never played it.
Yeah. Well,
I've never played Half-Life.
Well, you know, I have a question of the week, but here's a question of the week for you. When have you found it necessary to actually cheat? Well, first, Paul.
Necessary?
Yeah, I mean, you said, oh, you know, I'm not having fun. Let me just, you know, maybe it's even, you know, on the second time around, like with Dragon Age. I cheat all the time now.
I won't go so far as to say cheat. I would say skip things that I didn't want to deal with.
Okay.
Which would be the Warcraft series.
You're talking about the RTS.
Yeah, the Warcraft series.
Okay.
And it would just be like, oh, I can see exactly how this is going to play out. I don't really feel like chasing each and every one of their peons around the forest for another hour. Like, whatever, I'm okay.
And just have them all die and just say, oh, frick, die.
Right, and it's like, or sometimes, like, I will use a cheat code to accept defeat and just get past the roadblock. Like, frankly, I just use it as, like, a microtransaction to continue playing, like, going back into a good part of the game.
Oh, you know, that reminds me, the cheat I use the most without any guilt whatsoever is the money cheat for any of the Sims games.
Yeah, or SimCity.
You know, I say, I don't want to, you know, I don't... I want that furniture. I want that computer. I don't want to have to wait. I mean, I'm a lot... You know, the funny thing is with The Sims, I no longer do that. I mean, I do it sometimes for SimCity, but The Sims, you know, I just say, okay, fine. They can only afford that ratty desktop.
Right, and you know what? It's because I could support that theory. And it's because they're... it seems to me that their content pack, or at least their starting content, is, like, really not as much as it used to be back with, like, The Sims 1. Like, it just felt like The Sims 1, it came with a lot more stuff. And now it's, like, they have this expansion pack model so ingrained into the franchise, which is not about, by the way, new items. It's about new meshes so that the community can go make their own stuff out of those new meshes.
And the other thing is with Dragon Age, right, I beat it several times, both Dragon Age 1 and 2, and I found the combat extremely boring, so now I just auto-kill everybody, not because it's too difficult for me, but I just want to get through it, especially
right.
Dragon
Age.
Right,
see, I think that saying cheating implies, like, lack of ability, and it's, you know, I prefer to think of it as, like, skipping. It's, like, lack of desire.
It's sort of like cheating in school.
Like,
I mean, they say,
like,
you know, you're only cheating yourself.
It's like I could hop over this difficult part, or I could stop playing your product and go do something else, which I understand in a console or PC game, not really going to be so much the developer's problem because they already have your money, but...
Well, I stopped playing Dragon Age Inquisition because the combat and everything in it was so boring. And I couldn't cheat, so I said, you know what, I'm done. And I tried. I had several attempts that I was. I started again, and I said, nope. Wake me up when you have a cheat code so that I can just get through some of the boring stuff.
How about wake me up before you go?
Yeah, how about you, Scott?
Yeah, I think that's like what you were saying. If something's too boring or just impossibly difficult, I'll either, you know, try to skip it. If it's a good story, I'll try to find ways to skip it or get around it, get into God mode. You know, because waiting for Sims to earn money is just boring. And usually when I'm playing The Sims, I'm doing kind of a story, a role play, you know.
But the thing is, I've stopped power gaming with The Sims, you know. Now I'm perfectly okay with letting my character die. And the thing, I didn't need to cheat to get the immortality stuff, you know, that extends your life 3 days each time, you know.
That stuff's easy, yeah.
But the problem is that, you know, you end up being young while all your grandkids are dying around you, and it's just too creepy. So...
yeah, it's like, I don't have that kind of time to put into this. I mean, it's like, here's the thing. There are more video games and board games and card games and games of chance on this planet that I feel like I need to get to experience that I don't. I'm over grinding. Grinding is dead.
Well, here's the thing.
I read a whole article about it. Grinding is dead.
There's a different thing, though. You know, I will never cheat in multiplayer because everybody else, you know, you're cheating someone else. You know, I don't care if I hurt the computer's feelings by cheating in single player.
Actually, there's another thing about the grinding that Paul just mentioned, because that really is boring, and I am done with that, too. My wife had recently replayed Dragon Warrior 1, and she got so tired of grinding up the experience, she doubled it, just the way, she was using an emulator, so she doubled the experience output, so that way she wouldn't have to do any of the grinding, and she beat the game within, like, an hour because of that. And she didn't even rescue the princess. She just went up, got the seal, and left her there, and then went and killed the dragon thing. It was hilarious.
Sorry, honey. You can fend for yourself.
Yeah, exactly. And the king didn't even care. He's like, oh, thanks for saving the kingdom.
To be fair, for anybody who doesn't know this retro classic, or, you know, what we call a good game, in Dragon's Quest... you save the princess about halfway through the game. And then you have to go kill the guy who locked her up in the first place.
Huh. Yeah.
So we're going to end this because we're taking up too much, but I will note that Square did announce Dragon Quest XI the other day.
Yes, saw that. That was very cool.
Woohoo!
Yeah, so,
I mean, I haven't played any of them since the first one because all of us cool Nintendo Power subscribers got that shit for free.
Came in the mail, free game! I will say this, it might be the one thing that actually makes me buy a 3DS. It's coming next year, though, so I have plenty of time.
I was playing Layton on the 3DS.
Yeah. Anyways, we gotta move on to game news. First news item, disturbing portrait of Konami corporate environment alleged. And this comes to us from Games Industry Biz. Konami, already a publisher mired in bad press, and if... for those who have been not listening to the podcast, which is entirely possible, this has been a running thing with Hideo Kojima, who's the developer of Metal Gear Solid 5, is allegedly left, and Konami, what's it called, and this, and there's a lot of bad blood going on. Well, this time it found itself at the center of a maelstrom of ill will thanks to a series of revelations about HR practices at the firm that wouldn't seem out of place in a military or a prison. That things have been increasingly unsettled at Konami has been open knowledge for some time. The firm's most talented developers, producers, and directors have been streaming out of the company's doors for years, either by choice or after confrontations with management. Key projects have been canceled or farmed out as licenses, and the company has delisted itself from the New York Stock Exchange. In the report, it's claimed that the computers in many departments of the company, including the former Kojima Productions, now renamed Number 8 Production Department, did they name themselves after a song by Yoko Ono?
They possibly did.
Yeah. Their computers are not connected to the internet in order to focus employees' attentions. Email addresses for many staff are formed of random strings of letters and numbers, which are regularly reshuffled and redistributed, allegedly as to prevent headhunting by external agencies. Lunch breaks are monitored by clocking in and out, with anyone who transgresses strict time limits being named and shamed in internal communications to other staff. Security cameras monitor corridors and public spaces to keep track of staff movements. quote-unquote, encouraging efficiency rather than unnecessary socialization. Ha! Socialization. Who needs that in the workplace? According to Nikkei's sources, sources which have been anonymously corroborated elsewhere, and I'm pretty sure Paul will love this, employees who disappointed or deemed to have underperformed are reassigned to what they can only be described as punishment duties. Talented composers, programmers, and other well-trained specialists are plucked from their hard-earned positions and redeployed as workers in Konami's pachinko factories, as office security guards, or as janitors on garbage duty at the firm's fitness clubs. So,
I think we found the fire we were looking for.
You know what? I'm totally with Konami. I think employees are lazy and they socialize too much. They have entirely too much fun and they don't deserve email addresses. That makes sense. No, I'm kidding, of course. Paul, if you are in this sort of company,
I have to take care of something that's going to take exactly like 3 minutes.
Okay.
I'll be right back.
He's off to murder Konami executives now.
Yeah, I don't blame him. I'll be right there with you, Paul. We'll go. Because this just makes me sad. And I mean, because seriously, before this was Suikoden, the series Suikoden. I don't know if you ever played that.
Sudoku.
They were a product of Konami, and I think they had a subdivision that focused on that game series. And I know, like, a few years ago, it was shut down. And we've always, I mean, the fandom community of the game really wanted Konami to make another Suikoden, and we thought that we were going to get a Suikoden 6, and there were hints and rumors about what was going to be in it, and this just kind of clarifies why that game, you know, why that series, I think, has gone down, because it probably wasn't efficient enough for them to make money. And how can you be efficient when you have
employees, you know, forced to be, you know, under the gun like this? It reminds me of the episode from The Simpsons when Homer left his job to become a pin monkey, and then Maggie was born, so he had to return to Burns. And Burns had the demotivational sign, and this is my impression of Mr. Burns. Don't forget, you're here forever.
Oh, yeah. I think that's the yes. I think that was a year forever, year for life, something like that. But yeah.
No, because I know it's year here forever, because the letters that are necessary for Homer to cover it up to say do it for her.
Yes. Yeah.
So
right.
Yeah, I mean,
that was sweet.
You know, can you imagine being in a company in which if you underperform for whatever reason, and you know, I don't know what underperforming means. Does it mean they didn't do this coding in time, like they had a strict deadline? I mean, being sent to be a janitor to clean up towels in your fitness club. It's a wonder why people are leaving in droves from Konami.
That would not be acceptable.
I mean, Paul, imagine if you were at your job and for whatever reason they said you underperformed and they sent you to be an office security guard.
Right. Like, I got stuck in traffic coming back from lunch one day. I'm 15 minutes late. I'm called out like a 10-year-old and told to go from the art that I do to being a security guard.
Well, it's different. They just mocked people for being late. I guess they didn't make their deadline or something like that. Something silly like that, you know. And like I said, I don't know what.
Like, there's a difference between an entire department not meeting a milestone or a feature that doesn't meet a milestone. And it's like, okay, well, everybody on the feature X team.
I mean,
you know, you could try a little harder next time. Let us know if there's anything we could help you. But I mean, yeah, you still wouldn't even the teeth hiss sucking noise that I made wouldn't actually happen. This is like insane to me.
Here's the thing. You know, when you hear stories about developers being abused or whatever, you know, you think of stuff like Team Bondi, and basically the stories you hear is that they're being overworked. You know, they're doing 80-hour work, they're not being compensated, you know, they're being harassed, they're forced to do all this stuff. I've never heard of anybody actively trying to humiliate people for not performing to what their bosses think is a proper job.
Wasn't
how you motivate people.
Wasn't the Rockstar branch that made L.A. Noir also?
Yeah, that's Team Bondi.
Oh, because that is
that was Team Bondi. Yes.
Yeah, with the infamous Rockstar Wives letter.
Mm-hmm.
I forgot about that.
And it's like, yes, we are the wives of the employees of
We'd like
Rockstar
to see
Games.
Our husbands.
We haven't seen our husbands in 6 months. It's not cool. Like, they work these awesome jobs, be compensated very well, and then to provide for their children that they never get to see.
The thing is, in
a nutshell.
I mean, a lot of coding jobs themselves aren't exactly the most scintillating things in the world. You're sitting in front of a screen, you see a lot of numbers, you gotta make sure the numbers are right, whatever. And you have, you know, a lot of it is dull, boring work, and it's bad enough that you have to do it for 40 hours, then you have to do it for 80 hours. And I'm trying to figure out which is worse, either being worked 80 hours a week, or being actively humiliated because you were late to lunch.
Depends. Is it 80 hours doing what I love?
80 hours a week, no doubt.
I think it depends on how much you're getting paid, too.
I would not want to work 80 hours a week. I knew one person that did that, and I don't know how he stayed married. I have no clue. That's just...
You know, there are people who actually willingly work 80 hours a week.
He was willingly working 80
I'm just
hours.
Saying, you know, I mean, on their own, you know, without any prompting. So, you know...
I guess it depends on the work, but it's just... I guess we can't get too sidetracked. It's just too much for me.
This is definitely one of the W2F stories of the year so far.
Yeah, really not.
Not cool. Yeah.
Yeah.
Not cool. Yeah, not.
Well, it's not cool, but just bizarre.
Yeah.
I mean, this is like being at Foxconn and them telling people that the reason why people are committing suicide in their factory is because of it's haunted.
I feel that it does kind of explain why Konami's games seem to be going downhill.
I think it explains why people are leaving Konami. See,
yeah.
I'm trying to figure out what Konami's motivation is here, because it seems like demotivation, and the only people you can really abuse are college students, because they're desperate for work. But even then, even they have their snapping points.
To me, that is them falling apart. They're like the Empire. The tighter they grip their hands, the more the world slips through their fingers.
I think this is sort of like Godwin's law. When you start going to Star Wars metaphors, I think the discussion is over on this.
Nothing ends a conversation with Paul Novak like a bad Star Wars reference. Or a good one for that.
I thought that was a good one.
It was, but it just indicates that it's the end of the discussion.
Okay, let's go to the next
thing. Yeah, because it was either Star Wars or Nazis, you know. Like I said, it's sort of like Godwin's law. So,
and
anyway.
Everybody knows that Jonah Falcon would not be able to have a conversation if there weren't Nazis ever.
Okay. Moving on.
There's nothing left to talk about.
Scott, next item, please.
Okay. Deus Ex. Mankind Divided. Player choices more impactful. Boss fights optional. From Silicon Era. Silicon
like the
era.
Age of Silicon.
Because the thing is, I don't, for whatever reason, they have it as one word, but it's Silicon Era. So.
Era, okay. Eidos Montreal is developing a sequel to Deus Ex Human Revolution, which takes place 2 years afterwards. The golden age for augmented people is over in Deus Ex Mankind Divided, and Adam Jensen works in an anti-terrorist group. That's a short golden age, but anyways. According to a Silicon Era interview with Deus Ex Machina, Mankind, Divided producer Stefan Roy.
Here's the thing. Sure. Keep in mind, it's Canadian, so Stefan Roy.
Ah, okay.
Because it's Canadian.
Okay. I thought an F was for that, but okay. We want to make sure there are choices and consequences. A couple have said at the end of Deus Ex Revolution, there aren't really consequences, since at the end you can save the game and go back and choose to see all the endings. I kind of like the New Game Plus thing. I promise when you progress much later in the game, something will happen, and you're going to say, fuck it, because I decided to turn left instead of right. As for the boss fights, debates, the social boss fights are still in there, but let's say you like to play stealth. I won't force you to have a boss fight. You can avoid boss fights if you want to play like this. Please do it. The boss fights were kind of a paradox in Human Revolution. I was forcing you to play aggressive while you spent most of the game in stealth. now you won't have that kind of paradox anymore.
Okay, so what he meant by people could just save the game, what happens is that at the end of the game, basically you can press one of four buttons. That was your choice. One of four buttons, and each one had its own ending. So you could just save and then press one button, watch it, then load, go back, press a different button each time.
Why does this sound familiar? Oh, because it was the same thing at the end of Bioshock and Fable.
And also Mass Effect 3.
Give me the scroll. Press yes for no.
Also in Fable, too. I mean, with the sword. You can either keep the sword or throw the sword away. So what they're saying here is that if you do something, a certain ending won't be available anymore. You know, because you did something and it changes the story. Right. So you can't have that kind of ending, right? As for boss fights, now, here's the thing about Deus Ex Human Revolution. They're running back on time, so they outsourced the boss fights. And unfortunately, if you were building up your character to, say, be someone who's social and stealthy and all that stuff, the first boss came up and just, you know, you didn't have anything against them, because if you didn't have weapon skills, you were screwed. You had to figure out, you know, I figured out a way to get past them just by throwing barrels at them, like some demented Donkey Kong. But we have something called gameplay and story segregation, and that's what happened here, was that the way you played, if you had a certain build, you were screwed. So they're ending that, you know. They had a later patch that allowed you to, say, if you were stealthy and hacking, you could sneak by him and hack something, and turret would come out and fire at him, stuff like that. But, you know, just goes to show, when you outsource, you better make sure that you're on the same page as other people.
I agree.
Yeah,
ultimately,
anybody that you outsource to is answerable to the IP holder, and there's somebody at the IP holder who should be checking those games.
Yeah.
I agree. Communication, folks.
Like that memo that Batman never sits. I mean...
What?
It was a thing. It was a thing. Somebody making a Batman game apparently received feedback that, like, oh no, you can't do this because Batman doesn't sit. Oh, we know our character.
He sits in the Batmobile.
Right. No, outside of... No, he's not sitting in the Batmobile. He's driving the Batmobile. That's different. But whatever. But the point is that whoever was in charge of reviewing, you know, protecting the Batman character on behalf of Warner Brothers was like, no, you can't do this, and this is the rule. And that person was not an expert in the character of Batman, because as soon as that memo or email or whatever it was hit Reddit, the chain was flooded with comic panels from the last 75 years. Batman often just sitting around.
Yeah, especially
sitting at the
Justice
League table, sitting at the Bat computer.
Well, was he sitting in Batman games?
That's the thing. I have no idea. It could have been taken out of context. I'm sure it was. It's the internet. Things happen.
Maybe he was squatting, and that was a problem.
The point is that, you know, if somebody has an intellectual, you know, and they're going to protect it, like, dutifully, which they should be, and they need to outsource some of their gaming, I mean, it behooves them to have someone who's an expert on their property check off that work.
So,
and approve it. Like, someone's got to approve the outsourced work.
Getting back,
otherwise, you don't pay for it.
Getting back to the main part of this story, you know, the one of the problems I hate is that when you're playing a game, and some time, like halfway or three quarters, you have this realization you built the wrong character.
That happens, you know, in Heroes of Might and Magic all the time.
I mean, it's like, wait a minute, I thought I had the freedom, but apparently I built the wrong character. My character build was wrong, quote unquote. And you did not anticipate the build that I did, you know. It's not like a stupid build either. I'm talking about, you know.
Yeah. I know exactly what you mean. You should be able to... Any character class, any build, should be able to get through the game, I think. Like in Quest for Glory from Sierra, you had three classes, and you couldn't build them wrong. They were your classes, and you had your stats, and there was always a way to get through a problem, you know? Three or four different ways, and each one was catered to each of the classes for that game. So really, a game should be balanced so that way you can't build it wrong. Like, all the skills are useful and will get you through a puzzle somehow if they made the puzzles good enough and balanced enough for solutions for different characters or different play styles.
There's the top two ways that come to my head on how to fix this problem is this way, which is, you're right, make sure it's not a dead end at all. Or B, take a look at the other side of this problem, which is the length of time it is taking you to communicate a failed choice to a player. So if you wanted to be a paladin and that was not the way to finish this board, then you should get like 3 days into being a paladin being like, oh, the paladins leave the kingdom because they're going to go do the next board. Yeah. But you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Because you didn't spend 6 months getting to that point. It's like, oh no, I can't win because I chose being a paladin 6 months ago.
Well, the thing is that, you know, you have to see, this behooves on the developer's part to recognize the weakness of a character class and just not include it if it's not working. You know, they should know, you know, if this person goes all stealth, they're not going to be able to beat the game, period. You know, the way we have it built, it's stealth. So remove the ability to have stealth. Nothing's lost. A person can't be frustrated with a feature if that feature doesn't exist. You know, a good example of a video game that keeps its eye on that sort of stuff is Fallout 3 and Beyond, because it was impossible to make a bad character class with that game. You know, every time you did something or added something, it added to your character, never subtracted. You know, and it never put you in a situation in which you didn't have the skills to get out of that situation.
Or at least maybe give them the ability to rebuild stat trees like that.
Oh, they do that in Mass Effect, in which you're unsatisfied with Shepard. Okay, you pay this amount of money, and boom, you could respec them. You know, and they do that, and they did that in World of Warcraft. I haven't played in a long while, but you know, you can play some gold or free the first time through. It's like, oh, you didn't do it well. Respec your class. So we're going to move on to the next item. Go ahead, Paul.
Zombie U.
Come on, Paul. It's one of the launch at Wii U games.
Yeah, okay. Hey, Jonah, why don't you name all the launch Wii U games?
There couldn't have been that many,
Paul. Why don't you name all the launch Atari 2600 games? You were around for that.
Combat, adventure.
Yeah, shut up, no one cares. Zombie U drops the U, preps for August launch on PC, Xbox One, and PS4. And this comes to us from Ars Technica. When the Wii U game console launched in 2012, fans hoped that companies other than Nintendo would make games for it. Wow, I would like to point out, by the way, that this is somebody's opinion. That hope didn't take long to fizzle. By the middle of 2013, those third-party game publishers dropped support, including Ubisoft, whose games Rayman, Legends, and Zombie U relied pretty heavily on the system's touchscreen gamepad. The long-delayed Rayman Legends eventually found its way to other systems, but Zombie U, a launch game for the console, was another matter. Its post-apocalyptic terror relied on that touchscreen, on making players manage inventory, puzzles, security cameras, and other stuff on a smaller screen while zombies raged on your TV, making it a rare delight for an otherwise crowded zombie gaming landscape. Sadly, its low sales on the Wii U seemingly spelled death for the brilliant franchise. Ubisoft is bringing the series back, however, with the letter U blatantly chopped off. I'd like to see the art asset on that, probably like with a cleaver or something. on the Xbox One, PlayStation 4, and Windows PC, digitally on August 18th. Instead of using the touchscreen, players will have a screen-filling inventory menu that will still afford a peripheral view of oncoming undead.
I don't understand why they're not going to use Smart Glass then. Because Smart Glass, you know, allows you to do the same thing sort of like the gamepad, you know, which you can use your, whether it's your cell phone or your iPad as a, you know, as a second screen.
Yeah, I would kind of agree that would be a solution. This sounds like a really easy one. And the thing is, it doesn't sound like there was ever a technological reason why they hadn't done this before. There might have been a contractual one, and it's like, hey, if we make it not Zombiu, then it doesn't fall under the Zombiu contract, and we could release it on other platforms.
That's true.
I mean, then there's the 30% rule. I mean, this feature sounds like it will probably make the game 30% different, so it's not just a cheap shot.
I don't know. I don't know if it's exactly a port of the Wii U version either. I think it takes place somewhere else. Now, for those of you who didn't play Zombiu, it was basically Dark Souls with zombies for the Wii U, you know, in which it was a survival horror game, but like good survival horror games, this one didn't have a real story, though. You're just going from A to B, right? But you didn't have many weapons. You were always low on ammo and all that stuff, so it forced you to take different routes, you know, and use your brain to deal with the problems ahead, you know. And everybody who played Zombiu on the Wii U really, really enjoyed it. Now, I take it you didn't play this, Paul?
No.
Okay.
I have, I think, 3 games for the Wii U.
How about you, Scott?
Sorry about it.
We did play a horror game on the Wii U, but I'm not sure what it was called. It was one where you had to hold up your arms and like slash at the ghosts, and
a lot of Mario game. Actually, it sounds like a Mario Sunshine type game. I know it isn't, but you know.
Yeah, and I remember my wife just having a really hard time getting the Wii U to read her movements correctly on was trying to do when she was attacking.
There was a game that was like that was on the Xbox One. Are you sure it wasn't a Kinect game?
I'm pretty sure it was the Wii. I just can't remember what the game was called now. It's been a long time. We haven't played the Zombiu game, but we did play a motion sensing game with the horror stuff, and it was kind of, the controls were funky, but we liked the atmosphere of it, though.
You're using motion control? Were you using a Wiimote on your
mm-hmm.
Wii U?
Yes, the Wiimote.
Okay. See, here's the question. Something that someone brought up, by the way, was that it might have been that
Ubisoft.
No. But it was related to something you said. Ubisoft may have chosen not to use the smart pad because they didn't know how many people were going to use that feature.
Right.
You know? And if people aren't going to use the feature, then why put the feature in? So that was the other thing that they thought of, you know. But, I mean, it's an interesting concept, and it's sort of different from most zombie games, you know? And mm-hmm. I'm going to tell you something. Zombies are oversaturating our not only video games, but our entire culture.
Yes. I will say it till probably the day I retire, if not the day I die. As a game designer, there are 3 words I am sick to death of hearing. Post-apocalyptic, zombie, dystopia. Those are the 3.
You're awesome, Paul. I agree with you.
It's like,
what about volumetric?
How many times can we do the same idea to death? Like, if I hear that, I don't want in on the project. Here's an idea. How about, like, a story of, I forget her name, but the African queen who sold her enemies to slave traders and then was turned on and the slave traders took her people.
How about a post-apocalyptic My Little Ponies?
That wasn't even a funny robot chicken sketch. I don't even know what made you think it would be a funny joke.
Hey, Scott just giggled, so apparently it tickled someone's fantasy.
Scott's new.
It's not it's the ridiculousness of the suggestion.
Yes, exactly.
Scott's new. I'll cut him some slack.
Well, you know. So, yeah, Zombie, you know, I will check it out. If it's a digital game, I'm imagining it's going to be like $30 rather than $60.
You know, it's too much when they put zombies in, I think it was Pride and Prejudice.
Zombie Pride and Prejudice.
Yeah, they just literally copied and pasted the word zombies in
there.
No,
well, like, not quite. They actually did some cleverness with it, you know. You also have Zombie Hamlet, and, you know, someone who works on video games, I would have thought that one of the words that you didn't want to hear anymore was volumetric fog.
No, we just call that fog of war.
Yeah, we're fine with fog of war. It's the freaking zombies we're tired of. I mean, they're not even interesting monsters. They're barely henchmen. Cannon fodder.
There was an interesting Tales from the Crypt episode. I think it was Tales from the Crypt, in which these two guys, these two zombies, were mugging a black guy, right? And it turns out the black guy was a vampire, and the black vampire was talking down to the zombies like they were nothing, and you know, so it was sort of like reversal on racism.
Why it always got to be black?
No, it just happened. Right. It was a commentary on, you know, racism, you know, and so what happened, you know, he was calling them animals and less than whatever, you know, so that sort of thing. So.
Oh my God. If we're going to talk about veiled racism, I swear to God, I will be the only person to have seen this between the three.
Oh yeah.
Did either of you see Disney Channel's movie Descendants the other day?
No.
Okay. No. I'll set the scene for you briefly. Sleeping Beauty's mother meets Maleficent's daughter.
Oh, I think I heard about that.
At like a cocktail party or something, right? And the black actress who plays the grandmother figures out who Maleficent's daughter is, and their shared history, and goes off on like this racist rant that is reminiscent of Juror Number 4 in 12 Angry Men.
Okay.
I mean, it was horrifying. It was like, oh my God, Disney Channel, like just change the word black to villain, and here you go, and put it in the hands of a black actress who did a phenomenal job with it.
I guess they didn't learn their lesson from the Fire Rabbit. Was it Fire? Dang it!
Song of the South.
Yes, that one. They didn't learn the lesson from that, apparently.
Oh, the problem with Song of the South, though, is not that it has any racism. It's that it naively dismisses the fact that it ever happened. So it just kind of pictures everybody living together in an idyllic
South.
What
is post-antebellum?
Did you see the centaur? I know, we're really getting off track, but the
centaur boob? Centaur boob, digitally deleted from most modern copies of Fantasia.
Yeah, that was pretty bad. Anyways,
moving on.
Moving right along in search of good times and good news.
Okay, Fallout 4 fan releases schematic for a 3D-printed Pip-Boy. And this comes from Eurogamer. A follow-up to last week's story about the fact that the Pip-Boy edition of Fallout 4 was sold out. Gamer and 3D printing enthusiast Ivo De Haas has released a schematic for one who can for people to print out their own Pip-Boy 3000 Mark IVs to slip their smartphones in and pretend they're Pip-Boys. Like Bethesda's official model, this fan-made interpretation is designed with a housing of a smartphone, so you'll be able to interact with Fallout 4 via the mobile app you'll have strapped to your wrist. It won't come with all the bells and whistles of the official brand, but it'll come with a couple of orange LED lights, and Paul is deeply disappointed with his LED lights.
Yeah, I think I gotta return these things, guys. I mean, they're like 15 watts each. The capability is kind of cool, but...
Yeah. Of course, very few folks own a 3D printer, and outsourcing projects to 3D printing studios isn't exactly cheap. But then again, neither is the Fallout 4 Pip-Boy edition, and that collectible is liable to only get pricier over time. So let me ask you a question, Scott. Are you interested in a Pip-Boy?
I was at first when Todd Howard introduced it, and my jaw just dropped, and it's like, oh, I need one. But then, like, looking at it after a while and just visualizing myself having it on, playing the game, I think I would get tired of it sitting on my arm. And, like, I'd be like, oh, I'm tired of looking down at this thing. And it would get clunky. And then I realized it was made of plastic, so it's probably not going to be that durable. Mm-hmm. And so it's like, after a little while of that initial knee-jerk, I need this, I came to my senses and, like, yeah, this isn't a good purchase.
Well, now if you have a 3D printer, you can print your own.
Yeah, but the 3D printer is really expensive, way more than the initial $120 just to get the Pip-Boy edition. And I have seen a tutorial on how to make your own using parts from like the hardware store. So there are other ways to do it besides the 3D printer, but I don't think I'd want it. Because I'm afraid I'd get tired of it sitting on my arm, and then I just wouldn't use it again, and it would just kind of sit in the corner collecting dust.
Imagine having to play any Mega Man game with the new Capcom Mega Man helmet on your head. I mean, that thing weighs like 20 pounds.
Yeah.
Well, you're not hardcore then if you don't want to do it. I meant that facetiously.
You
know what?
No, you just want to hit every one of my raw nerves today, don't you?
No, that was said facetiously. Right. I really don't care about hardcore or softcore or whatever. Wait, that makes no sense.
Or midcore or core. Or hardcore.
Or Sony core with their woman peeing on the toilet.
It's like you know what? It's like reading a D&D book that's written in High Gygaxian where the word level can mean either going up or down in a dungeon or up or down in experience, or we'll go up a level. No, we'll go down a level.
That was a joke in one of the Order of the Stick
Order
things.
Order of the Sticks, yeah.
And also, what's it called? It also level means also at eye level, remember?
Right, oh.
Yeah, so. Anyways, moving on to the next item. Go ahead, Paul.
Vote to Play coming soon for PS Plus members. And this comes to us directly from Sony. Sony is announcing a new Sony PlayStation Plus program promotion, Vote to Play. This promotion enables PlayStation Plus members to vote on one of the several PlayStation 4 games for the upcoming month's Instant Game Collection. The game with the most votes will automatically be included in your future free game lineup for PlayStation Plus. Members will get their runner-ups at a discount. Details of the promotion are promised in the near future. That's exciting.
Well, it's sort of like what Amazon does. Remember, they had people voting for their gold box sales, if I remember correctly.
Anytime you take the time to figure out what your consumers might want and then actively give it to them, you're kind of not going to go wrong.
Although maybe it's a false vote, like all of them will eventually be coming out. You're just going to pick which ones comes out first, you know?
Well, no, it's you pick which one you're getting free. They're all four coming out.
Yeah, but I mean, eventually all of them will be free. I mean, at some point.
No, because not every product can be a loss leader.
I don't know.
I mean, monetarily, you're not going to stay in business. You can't feed your kids that way.
I just like the voting practice because at least you can hope to get certain games that you know. I mean, it's better than nothing. You know, getting it for free now is good. And you pick which one, and hopefully you can have that voting practice and other things like some of the older games.
It's amusing. They have the voting for games to be on Xbox backwards compatible.
Yeah,
and it's sort of like people are seeing the race between Red Dead Redemption and Call of Duty Ghosts against each other as the top two. I can't understand why anybody would care about Call of Duty Ghosts since it's just Call of Duty, and there you go. But yeah, it's just interesting to see people just voting. A lot of them didn't get the message that all of the first party games would be backwards compatible, and you still have people voting for Halo Reach and other first party things, but.
Huh.
Anyway,
Good Old Games also has a voting thing where you can vote for games to be put on, their storefront.
Don't talk about Good Old Games to Paul. He had a bad experience.
I know.
I'm sorry. I need to stop the news right now because we have a hot breaking tip coming in.
Uh-oh.
Dungeons & Dragons movie officially announced, and this comes to us from comicbook.com.
That was a couple of hours ago, but okay.
Breaking news.
Well, you know what? I don't care so long as I just want Jeremy Irons in it. Otherwise, I don't care. I want Jeremy Irons reprising his role as Profion.
Okay, so
in the new movie.
Don't bury the lead, Jonah. We'll get there. Press release from Warner Brothers states that Warner Brothers Pictures, Hasbro, and Sweet Pea Entertainment are moving forward on a feature film franchise based on Dungeons & Dragons, the world's most popular role-playing game, which I play weekly. That's not in the press release. That's my own note. Hasbro's Brian Goldner and Stephen Davis, Courtney Solomon and Alan Zeman of Sweet Pea Entertainment, and Roy Lee of the Lego Movie and How to Train Your Dragon are attached as producers. Highlighting the priority being given to the project, Warner Brothers Pictures has their script written by David Leslie Johnson.
I hate to tell you this, but this is going to ruin your expectations, but they have confirmed Uni will be in the movie.
That's fine.
Uni,
the unicorn.
Oh my god!
Oh, god.
Oh my god, can this please be the
live action movie edition of the cartoon concept. Oh my god, that would be amazing.
That would be.
I thought you hated Uni.
I'm sorry, I just flooded the basement.
I thought you hated it. So much more truer to the D&D
than all the other D&D movies they've had so far.
Paul's in love with Eric, the Cavalier.
Did you guys hear about the Kryn movie? They had top names in that movie, and it bombed. Like, how do you have these A-list actors and you just
Scott? Are you gonna be seeing the Minecraft movie?
Probably, yeah.
Because it's actually it's being done by the same guys that did the Lego movie as well.
I love the Lego movie, so I definitely will see the Minecraft movie. It looks good so far.
What, the Minecraft movie?
Yes, the Minecraft movie looks good so far. The trailer that I saw for it.
There's a trailer for it? I'm going to have to check this out then.
Yeah, they released it at Minecon, I think.
Okay, so we got to wrap this up soon. So next item, Paul, very sad news item. Oh, wait, no, that's not Paul's turn. It's Scott's turn. I'm sorry.
Yeah, I just read.
Okay. Hitchhiking robot is decapitated, left in a ditch. From IFL Science. This summer, one small robot should have had a big adventure, but Hitchbot, the Canadian hitchhiking robot, has come to an untimely end 2 weeks after setting off for a final destination of San Francisco, California. While Hitchbot had traveled across Canada and Europe, coming to no harm, the hitching automaton was found vandalized and destroyed beyond repair in Philadelphia this month. Canadian journalist Lauren O'Neill tweeted the photo below of the broken robot's vestiges. It's horrible, guys. Decapitated and with limbs removed, the remains are a reminder of Hitchbot's sightseeing expeditions for an experiment to see how people would react and interact with a traveling robot in society. Hitchbot's trip came to an end last night in Philadelphia, after having spent a little over 2 weeks hitchhiking and visiting sites in Boston, Salem, Gloucester, Marblehead. Oh, sorry, Gloucester, Marblehead.
He still mispronounces it.
Anyways, New York City, wrote David Smith from McMaster University and Foyk Seller from Ryerson University on the Hitchbot website. Unfortunately, Hitchbot was vandalized overnight in Philadelphia. Sometimes bad things happen to good robots. We know that many of Hitchbot's fans will be disappointed, but we want them to be assured this great experiment is not over. On the kindness and helpfulness of strangers, Hitchbot traveled over 10,000 kilometers, 6,000 to 13 miles through Canada, and spent 10 days traveling through Germany earlier this year.
And it couldn't get past Philadelphia. What does that say about us? Now, they did say...
Was this a manned automaton?
It was just a robot, which was hitchhiking.
It was a robot, but it had
articulated arms, and it had, you know, eyes and all that stuff.
It just sat on a chair with a little LED face head, and it would have a voice, and I think, a recording thing that would give out responses and interact with people that, you know, came up to it. And so it just kind of sat there doing nothing, and it all depended on somebody coming over saying, hey, what are you, and you know, where are you going? And the robot would say, I'm going to Victoria or something. And
it had a hat that said San Francisco or bust on it, in this case.
Well, I mean, I saw the video for the Canadian trip, and it said, I'm going to Victoria. And so it was a neat little robot. It didn't do anything. It just sat there, and then some jerk decided to destroy it.
You know, it went to Fenway. It was on the streets of New York. I missed it. By the way, they said they did have video of whoever did it, but they're not bothering because it's not about it's not about catching someone vandalizing the robot. It's a science experiment. So
right. This was what sounds like the anticipated end of this project.
No, not really, because it had so much success.
Like they did it to see how long it would survive out in the wild.
I don't know. You know, if a hitchhiker gets decapitated and tossed in a ditch, I think the robot just passed the Turing test. I mean, people couldn't tell from a real human, I guess.
I mean, at first I had to look up, when I first read this, I had to look up to see what kind of robot it was. Did somebody think Skynet was happening? But, you know.
There was no Arnold going, please take me to San Francisco.
Yeah. I think it is kind of messed up that this has happened. And
I just wonder who would do that, you know, just to vandalize the robot.
I mean, it made it through two other countries at the very least.
Yeah, and it couldn't. It made it through to Canada and Germany, but the United States, nope, we're not ready for a hitchhiking robot.
Nope, apparently not.
Nope.
Not even like a sentient robot. I mean, could you imagine if it was like Commander Data from the Enterprise?
I know.
Well, if it was Brent Spiner, he wouldn't have to do much. So, anyways, the question of the week was, what prompts you to buy a new PC? But we had a better question earlier in the episode, which was questioning... What did we ask? All of a sudden, I forgot.
What motivates you to cheat in a game?
What will be your breaking point that will force you to... That'll make you cheat in a game? In a single-player game. We don't want to hear about you cheating in a multiplayer game.
I would like to answer the other question.
Yeah, no self-incriminating evidences, only in your own little bubbles, please. So, now again, there's a difference between cheating and... I'm just going to skip over this because it's boring.
Yeah, you know, here's the thing. We won't answer the this question because we can save it for another week because it's too hard to come up with questions of the weeks that are unique these days.
I can't answer the one that's in the notes, by the way. I mean, when the hell was the last time that I did that?
Well, no, people get new PCs. I didn't say anything about gaming PCs, you know, just the new PC. But that'll be next week's question. All right. So we have listener feedback from Arthur V at Xbox
Arthur the
One.
Fifth.
Yeah.
Yep.
Xbox One and PlayStation 4. The Chinese have a very different understanding of what a copyright infringement is, I'll say. At university, I was generally laughed at for having a physical UMD disc for the PSP by my Chinese course mates. Apparently in Hong Kong, you can purchase an already cracked system and download the games online. As lucrative as the Chinese industry is, I don't think Sony or Microsoft can ever crack it, regardless of the legal status of gaming in the country. Sorry. Piracy will kill any profits they hope to make. The only games that can survive in China are freemium games, which offer online transactions for additional content, and all you have to do is think of Nexon and Tencent and all that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
At Street Fighter V Beta will be worth it. Forgive my pun, game is so weak. Oh, Street Fighter V Beta be worth it. I was never really a fan of the Street Fighter games series. Like Jonah, I found it too technical. My biggest problem with the series is its poor storytelling. That's why I grew up playing Mortal Kombat with its accessible lore and buckets of ketchup. I was surprised to hear that Street Fighter V will be exclusive to the PS4. Sony must be paying Capcom a lot of money to keep it that way. Ironically, while skipping the Microsoft Xbox One, Capcom is bringing Street Fighter V to the Microsoft PC, meaning I can still enjoy the series as long as I overclock my system and get a diamond fiber connection. At P Sports, I still can't believe that esports actually exist. At least I don't call it a sport. Comparing Usain Bolt to some snotty, spotty teen who calls himself Death Lord Overkill 745 is just laughable. Nonetheless, esports is difficult to ignore. It's raising the profile of gaming, and often in a negative way. Maybe some popular regulation will do it some good. At the question of the week. And the question of the week is, what expansion pack did you like best? And since you were in here, Paul, do you have an expansion pack that you like the best?
Expansion pack in what?
In a game expansion, you know.
Any game?
Yeah, I mean, like,
give me a
Hero Magic 2, you're playing the Price of Loyalty expansion, you know, that sort of thing.
Answer his first, I gotta come up with an answer.
I can't think of an expansion pack I actually enjoyed. I don't tend to buy expansion packs on their own. I get them with the Game of the Year edition or in bundle, so for me they're just a part of the game. Well, here's the thing, if it wasn't part of the original game, it's still an expansion pack, you know.
But he doesn't know the difference, his experiences with the whole thing.
No, I mean, it's extra content.
It's like
that was. It's
really...
not. It's larger than DLC. It's not DLC. It's actually something that expands the game itself. You know.
Mm-hmm.
What were you about to say, Paul?
I've been questing on the expansion set for Heroes 2 for weeks now, but because I'm playing them all together, I kind of like even forget where the narrative changed over from one product to another.
It's so. Price of loyalty. The only recent ones I can think of were Dawnguard and Dragonborn for The Elder Scrolls 5. Here's the example, but all they did was throw extra content in my overpowered Dark Elf. But see, that's the entire point now, isn't it? I mean, that's what happened with Throne of Baal. You know, you just made your PC a lot more powerful. I believe that a good expansion pack must provide you with a new gameplay mechanic that lets you enjoy the game in a new way. It's what distinguishes the expansion pack from DLC. Throwing more of the same after you've completed 10 hours of a game is not worth the money. The expansion must also feel like an addition to the game, not something that was supposed to be there in the first place. And we already discussed that. In which, is this an expansion pack, or is this something you just hacked off the game and decided to release later and call it, ooh, look, a big expansion pack, with my finger, doing finger quotes. So, yeah, something like, you know, like Blood Moon for Morrowind, you know, allowed you to become a werewolf, that sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
Go ahead, Scott.
Yeah,
Scott.
Sorry.
Scott first.
Yeah, I was just saying, like, how, and they had the werewolf thing in Dawnguard as well, I think Dawnguard did expand Skyrim pretty well, giving you the vampire and werewolf abilities, so that way you can have your own little Team Jacob versus Team Edward.
I don't know what our policy on Twilight is here. Paul, did we ever have a policy on Twilight?
Seems kind of silly to me.
Okay, no, what were you going to say,
Paul? Joke.
Crap, I forgot. Oh, yeah. I don't know. To me, it's not downloadable. Downloadable content isn't always an expansion. I mean, if you get one extra fighter for Mortal Kombat a couple of weeks after, so like that's not on the same level as like a new narrative plot chain and tower fighting stuff.
Well, let's stick with you right now, Paul. You're playing Heroes of Might and Magic 2. The expansion for that was The Price of Loyalty. It added more campaigns. It added another faction. And added also various creatures that were not related to any factions. They were just, you know, on the overland.
Right. More actual content, more strategic elements to have to deal with.
And it wasn't
just like, you know, a new reskin skeleton and a new kind of zombie. Like, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like there was a lot of meaningful stuff in that expansion.
Speaking of Baldur's Gate, did you know that there's a new expansion for Baldur's Gate coming out?
Yep.
Wow, really?
They had actually, and they also had an actual new expansion for Age of Empires 2 as well, which is, you know. So anyways, look for our show notes at GamingPodcast.net, along with industry news and our gaming history articles. If you enjoy your feedback, so leave us comments on our blog at GamingPodcast.net. Also, hit us up at Facebook.com/GamingPodcast or send us your comments to fans@GamingPodcast.net. Subscribe to us on iTunes, leave us some iTunes comments. You can follow me, Paul, and Scott at Jonah Falcon, at Stager Monkey, and at Alpha Shard.
On Twitter.
On Twitter.
I mean, you have to tell people that because they can't, like, see that you're saying the ampersand.
That reminds me of the latest Bloom County that was released today. And what happens is that Opus accidentally uploaded a sex tape of Steve Dallas. And Opus, who had just woken up after 25 years, claimed that he did not know. He thought that Twitter was just the chat room for birds. And Steve said... So why did you upload it? And he says, well, I thought your quote-unquote little mariachi was a dying woodpecker. So, yeah.
What the hell?
Bloom County, you know, it's back. And it is, you know, and Berkeley Breathed is still at the top of his game with it, you know. He says it's because of Donald Trump, you know.
Oh, well, yeah. Donald Trump decided, hey, let's make everything funny for the next few months.
He released, Burke Breathed released a new t-shirt too. It shows Donald Trump and a realistic looking Bill the Cat saying, Donald Bill 2016, sure, why not? So, yeah. Anyways, we will see you next week, and I won't be as sleepy. Thanks to Paul. I mean, Paul went through a lot this past week, so, you know.
Oh, my God. I think that if I added it all up, I slept somewhere around 100 hours this week. It was not pretty. I mean, and it wasn't like... I mean, here's the thing. I have a canker sore on my tonsil. Like, that's really kind of silly. I mean, and anyone who's had braces in America, I mean, how many of those did you get over the 4 years that you had braces? So it's like... It's silly, it's annoying, it's painful, but it's, like, on the one spot that was just, like, dude, it is like Luke Skywalker flew into my mouth and just happened to hit the exhaust vent, and knocked me on my ass.
That's an interesting metaphor there.
But I'm telling you, it was like the one spot.
You know, every time I hear that, I think of the Kanker Sisters.
I guess there's the Star Wars reference to end the show on.
And I just added an Ed and Eddie reference too. Ed and Eddie. You never watched that? Really?
No, after my time.
Okay. Have you ever watched Ed and Eddie?
No, yeah, I was Scott, aware that it was a thing.
Scott, I was asking Scott.
Yes, I've seen it. Yes.
So you know the Kanker Sisters are. They're basically the female version of the Eds. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, anybody who watches that will instantly screw up their brain thinking about that. Anyways, we will see you next week. And the thing is that the reason why we're a little bit funky is because, well, at least I am, is because I was called, you know, to have Paul on, we had to stay up a little later.
Sorry, it's my fault.
That's not your fault. It's just the way it is. And we decided rather than skipping you this week, we would just wait a little bit and have you on.
I appreciate that.
Scott said we needed a three-way.
Yeah.
And you know what it is? Scott, I want to apologize, by the way, while we're in the moment, because that's a thing that I do. I accidentally kind of talk over you sometimes, and it's because we've gotten into a rhythm of having two people. So I forget to listen to see if you have something to say.
It's okay.
Well, we will see you next week, and hopefully Paul's timing will be better. At least we're coming, Scott.
I hope so.
See you next week.
Bye, Bond.
You see, you did it again.
See, I did it again.
It's okay.
See, here's the thing. We don't know who I go first because I always initiate it. But now you got to figure out who's second and who's third there. So, which one of you wants to be second?
I think that just like the "and" is the extra special guest star on any sitcom lineup, I go last.
Okay.
Like, and Nancy McKeon as Joe.
Because you want the bye bonds to be the last thing everybody hears. Okay, so
I took a lot of time crafting that gag, and you're only going to hear it a few more times anyway.
Yeah.
So you could indulge me.
Okay, so we'll do it again. See you next week.
See you next week, guys.
Bye, Bonds. What? It's good advice.